Hi everybody, welcome to season 4, episode 8 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Darren McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of Peterborough United. And a couple of things first of all. First, thank you for voting in the Football Content Awards. So I think the voting just closed, so we'll await for the results to see if there's some trophy that's lifted at Anfield this season.
Yeah, exactly.
And I want to, well, of course, we missed last week and we had some pretty crazy scheduling.
We did, yeah. What a week to miss. You know, obviously we had the whole Mansfield thing with, you know, a lot went on, obviously, and you know, Bradford obviously sacked the manager. I mean, you know, of all the weeks, but you know, again, you've got a business to run, you've got a lot going on in your life. I've got shit going on. So, you know, we try as best we can to get stuff out there. But again, it shows we're not always avoiding doing podcasts. You know what I mean? Because we want to, you know, a couple of games or whatever else, and we just didn't do it. So I guess a lot to cover in a short space today, right?
Yeah, I think if we want something big to happen, make sure we don't schedule a podcast for that week.
Well, I guess most importantly, let's dive right in, because really it's got to be about, you know, Mark Hughes losing his job. So did you have an inkling he was getting the bullet? Or were you just like a fan where you were like, oh, this could come any time now? Or
yeah, no, I hadn't bugged Ryan or anything like that on it, so I didn't know, you know, officially what was going on. But there was just something in his press conferences, you know, there's things I heard that I just knew that means he's on borrowed time. You know, his last press conference against Tranmere funnily echoed Derek Adams's last press conference, where he was basically saying, well, you know, they've got this history of firing their managers, and that's not got them anywhere. Right. You know, so basically giving the ultimatum of what's it done for you in the past. And the moment that I heard that, I'm like, he's done, you know, right. And he was done the next day.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I saw the news and I knew the Tranmere game was important. I'd seen comments from fans. You know, I know the minute the owner there or, you know, staff start getting hammered, you know, suddenly it then turns on the manager, because it's obviously a great at times deflection or, you know, whatever else. And then, you know, I guess my question is, why isn't the owner of Bradford just sell? Now's the time. There's so many people buying football clubs. If you're ever going to want to cash out and make a few bob or whatever else, excuse me, I've got allergies and I'm outside because the cleaners are inside, so I like my whatever. But if there's ever a time, now's the time. I don't, is he a sadomasochist? Because I don't understand. You know, the fans obviously aren't in love with you. You don't go to a lot of games. You're not really making any money in League Two. I'm not quite sure what the end goal is there. So, you know, the Mark Hughes thing, listen, you know, I wasn't a fan of the appointment in the first place. I'm not big on, you know, former people who are big names or whatever else dropping down into lower leagues. You know, I'd rather go with a different approach, but hire Darren Ferguson for the fifth or sixth time. But, you know, that's my different approach. I'm joking. Yeah. But
that would be my first call. We'll see if he wants another project in League Two instead.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, you know, I know you haven't had a great start to the season. What's it, 10 games in when they sacked him? Have you played two since then or one since then?
We've played one since.
Okay, yeah, you won obviously, on Saturday. But well, I guess I mean, I presume it's gone down well, because that's what the fans were paying for. That's what they wanted.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to the question about the owner, I have no idea what the end game is either. It seems that it's, you know, he's just waiting and biding his time and hoping that one day we get promoted, you know, without him putting any money in, and it increases the value of the club to the point where he gets his money back. You know, he's obviously not a football man, and he's never seen or heard. And it is a curious one. You know, I'm thankful that he didn't sell to Wagme. You know, that there is some, you know, I want to make sure that I hand this over to somebody who I believe would be a good steward of the club. It's not just a money conversation. But on the other hand, it's just a matter of time, and it feels like we're just bumping along until that actually happens.
Well, the problem, I guess, is League Two keeps getting stronger. You know, it's like, you know, a League Two at Wrexham and Notts County, you know, Stockport, who came up obviously last year, it's getting stronger and stronger. So I don't know how long you can. It's just an absolute criminal that they're in that league.
We talk on the pod all the time about we are where we deserve to be, but it's gut-wrenching, you know, to find yourself struggling to equalize in the last minute at home to Harrogate and playing, you know, losing to the Barrows of the world. And, you know, no disrespect to them, but you know, you see all these clubs who get promoted to league, or even they get relegated into League Two, and they turn it around. Probably the next season, maybe they take two seasons, they get out of there. And then you see teams like Carlisle or Stevenage who get it together and put a promotion, you know, get a promotion together. And we're always just bumping along, doing nothing, you know, and it's very frustrating. You know,
well, I've just seen Birmingham made an absolute mad decision to sack John Eustace, the sixth in the league. Obviously, this must be around the whole Wayne Rooney leaving America thing, which again, I'm fucking puzzled because take his name away, his managerial record is shit.
He's not done anything in the States for sure.
No. Well, even with Derby, I think his number two was very prevalent, and now he's now doing well at Hull. So you know, for a large part of the time, but I don't see how he deserves. Birmingham's a massive club. I don't see it drives me mad sometimes when I see people getting jobs. Now I could be wrong; they might be going somewhere completely else. But John Eustace did a great job there. You know, to have them sixth in the league. I mean, yes, they've recruited really well, and they've done well in the summer. And we battered them in pre-season, but you know, they've recruited brilliantly. Dembele's played a big part, obviously, in this. But Eustace has really kept it together and done well. And the Rooney thing, I just don't get the fascination. I mean, just people fall in love with names, I guess. I don't know. It's weird. Maybe Bradford need to dive in. Yeah. John Eustace, get him in the door for a chat.
Right. I mean, I don't know why somebody like Rooney, go off topic for a second, even needs to be a manager. I mean, I understand
I get the need.
And like, I need to be involved in football. I can't not be involved in football. Yeah. It's definitely not a money thing, but you know, why put yourself through the ringer?
I get the need to be involved because football's a drug. I've always said that it's an addiction. I would want to be involved no matter what. I didn't own Peter, but I did own Peter. I'd want to be involved in football. It is a drug. It's an addiction. It's people in and around it. People are going to coaching, people, management, you know, even people going to scouting. You know, they want to be around it. They want to be involved. They've had it all their life. Rooney's had it since he was, you know, 9 years old, probably. Yeah. So I get all of that. What I just don't get is the a top club that's like vying for promotion, you know, goes, well, we're going to go after a manager who hasn't really done anything. You know, and he's had some, and you know, it amazes me these managers who get so many great gigs. They must have great agents, you know. But anyway, good luck to him if that's the case. But it's a bit of the Lampard thing for me.
Yeah. So for us, you know, my overwhelming emotion was sadness, you know, that it just didn't work out. He rejuvenated the club when he came, but it turned out his presence had more of an impact than his, I don't want to say abilities from a management perspective, but the impact that he had on the field. You know, there was such a feel-good factor of him coming back. We needed that. We needed something to believe in. And we taught ever since the day he came that you just felt like they're not leaving everything on the field. There's something that isn't clicking, too conservative. You know, this year, playing it around at the back with players that can't really play it around at the back. Just not going direct. And I think that his playing style and that risk aversion was probably too much. I was actually digging into the data to have a look, and you know, a hat tip. So there's a website called Width of a Post that did it a little bit in a kind of review of the game on Saturday, looking at all the stats, you know, and actually the last few games when we've been on our bad run, you look at the stats, possession is high, you know, 60, 70%. Passes are high, 500, 600 passes. Pass accuracy is high. So we're keeping the ball, we're passing it a lot, and we're passing it accurately because it's small passes going backwards. The two games that we've actually won, away at Newport, 4-1, and then on Saturday, low possession, low passes, low pass accuracy. But, you know, you're going more direct, you know, you've got the players to deliver on that because it's not like we've got bad players. It's just very interesting. You know, Richie Smallwood on Saturday looked like a different player. He looked like the player from the Championship that we'd bought,
right?
Not the player that, you know, allegedly fell out with Hughes over his playing style. So,
but we'll see. What are you doing next? Where, you know, who's Are they going to put in a caretaker for a while and keep him in? He won on Saturday. Are they going to what's next?
Yeah, I mean, Kevin McDonald is caretaker, you know, and he's made it pretty clear. I'm a caretaker. You know, he went through the things he went through early in his career and went with his transplant, you know, that took some time away from him in terms of playing.
Yeah.
He wants to maximize these years that he's got left to play before he goes. He does ultimately want to go into management, but, you know, it's like, this is a short-term thing for me, you know, and anyone that calls me gaff is getting fined for doing so.
Fair enough.
So it's almost like I don't care. And I say that because we've tried everything and none of it's worked. So who am I to say who's the right person? You know, we've tried, you know, somebody like Mark Hughes. We did Derek Adams, who's won promotion many, many times out of this league. You've had the Boyers of the world, David Hopkin before that. It just seems like we've tried everyone. We've had something like 8 or 9 managers in the last 6 or 7 years. And here we still are in the same, you know, worse than we were when we started since Phil Parkinson left. So what direction would you go in?
What direction would I go in? It's apples and oranges, isn't it? It's you know, different club, different players, different whatever. You know, I don't know your squad well enough. I don't know what the talent you've got within. I don't know how they would suit to a certain, you know, every manager's a certain style, a certain way. I certainly wouldn't hire a conservative manager. It's not in my thing. Yeah. I don't want to watch, you know, boring football. I don't want to watch, you described a minute ago, fur coat, no knickers, lots of possession, lots of this, lots of that. Like, we have lots of possession. We have lots of passes, but we're like number one in XG, which means we're creating lots of chances. You know what I mean? It's not just tippy-tappy. So I want to see, you know, end product. I want to see goals. I definitely wouldn't be going down the older route. You know, Bradford's a massive club. You're going to have 200-300 applications for that job all day long. Do you go down the Kieran McKenna, try and pluck from a top academy? When I was looking, if Darren wasn't going to stay, I identified 3 under 21 managers in the Premier League, as well as a manager from non-league who was playing some unbelievable football, and another one. So, and again, if Alan Swan's listening, please don't be putting headlines up about who I was looking to recruit, particularly in the week my manager's just had. I don't need any of that, you know, blowback. I'm talking about, you know, I always wanted Darren to stay, but I always had to have a plan B in case somebody plucked him, and somebody could pluck him at any time. So who would I look at? You know, Palace have got a great, he's an Irish guy, he's the under 21 manager in the Premier League. He's got them up near the top of the league. Who else? There was another one. There was Palace. I mean, I had a list done altogether. There was a youth coach at Southampton who was doing very well. Good style of football. I'm not sure if he's still there or not, or if he's left. You know, when you look at McKenna, you look at some of the managers that come from Man U, some of the, you know, Critchley came from Liverpool. You look at some of those coaches, you know, I would look at, is it Ian Foster, the England under 20 manager with the elite squad? Great record, done really well. Great with young players. Again, it depends on the identity of your club. My football club is the youngest team in League One. So if I go out and get a 50 or a 60-year-old manager who's archaic,
you're not going to bring Neil Warnock in to manage.
No, a bit of a dinosaur. If I go out and get those types who have certain ways of playing, it's not going to work with the group we have. So, you know, as the youngest team in League One, I'd have to look at that and go, I'm going to need a manager. You know, Darren's 50-odd, but he's still quite young. You know, and everything in his mindset's quite young. So I would have to look for a manager who's between 35 and 45. You know, that would be kind of my point. And I would look at somebody who's been brilliant in the academy structure, brilliant with young players, so that you knock on the top Premier League club. Because yeah, another guy that I really liked was at Brighton. He actually played for us years before. The Andrew Crofts. Do you remember him? The ex-player at Gillingham. We'd signed him. He's done unbelievable things at Brighton. He's gone all the way through to their academy, but he's very involved with their first team, so he would never leave.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt he could be the next great one. If he ever decided he wanted to leave, I've heard great things about him.
So you wouldn't have, I mean, I know you did this with Darren originally all the way back in the day, but you wouldn't have a problem with bringing somebody in with no direct first team managerial experience.
You've just had a guy who managed some of the biggest clubs in the world who failed, according to your owners who fired him. So what difference does it make? So I would have no problem at all bringing in somebody with a different philosophy, you know, coming from Man United's academy, Man City's academy, Liverpool's academy, the England under 20 setup, the under 19 setup. I would have no problem whatsoever as long as there's a project for them and it's not just, they lose their first 3 games and you're moving on. It's got to be a project. So, for example, we're tailor-made for that kind of manager because of the age of our squad. So those types of managers would love our dressing room because it's like, okay, these are young players. I'm used to dealing with this. I'm not going to have some 33-year-old who's on a long-term contract tell me what the fuck you do and have to fall out with him or try and win him over and da-da-da. Yeah. And it sounds like you've got a few of Dad's army in your dressing room. So it's one of them. You know, our oldest player is 29, and he was meant to go on deadline day after that. I think the next oldest player is 25. So, for us, if Darren went on to a top championship side, we're tailor-made for a young up-and-coming coach.
Yeah.
That goes back to policy of club. Yeah. So again, I don't know what your owner's going to do. I don't know what Ryan's going to do. So Ryan's getting a lot of flack, but it's Groundhog Day, I guess. And for a club your size, it's crazy. You know, it really is. I always thought, anyway, I'd said to you privately, even though you've got him in the playoffs, it's like, not for me, not my, you know, I think I said to you at the time, hired Darren Ferguson. I think I'd had McCann at the time. Fergie was out of work. You know, it was either Steve Evans for me or it was go get Mike Gaffer. But Darren would never probably travel that far with his family and stuff. But, you know, the Steve Evans thing, obviously some of your fans love that. And some of them are like, don't fucking mention that name again. But, you know, I'm not sure if Steve Evans would go there now, you know.
I've always been talked about for Sheffield Wednesday, hasn't he?
Well, that wouldn't surprise me, old Stevie boy. Wouldn't surprise me at all, to be fair. So I don't know, you know, it's kind of like, it is Groundhog Day, right?
I feel like we want a project, but I'm not sure that we're willing to commit to a project, if that makes sense. Like the idea of I think what we want is, at the moment, what we want is a team that you think is an attacking style of play. You know, pretty direct is fine. You want people giving 100%. You just want to feel like they left it all out there. Now, you know, you can say that and then you start losing and then you see how, well, people might not want that anymore. But
it's quite cathartic for me, because even now when we're doing well, I still get fans moaning at me. I said I needed to put a straightener to a couple of fans, not a massive amount of fans, but like, you know, a freak goal goes in against Carlisle, which we dominated the fucking game. Our goalie, I don't think touched the ball, was gloves, 96 minutes. And it's just a freak goal. And again, you get people, you know, sign experience, do this, do that, blah, 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 blah. You have to do this. And I'm like, for fuck's sake, we didn't lose a game. We drew a game. It's 400 miles away. It's that fucking Carlisle on a Tuesday.
It's a horrible place to go.
It's a young group. We've absolutely fucking battered them. We've dominated the game. And yes, sometimes you get a kick in the arse. Happened at Mansfield, happened at Carlisle. Everyone's like, I want to see the statistics. We keep choking up this. We keep doing this. We keep giving up. It's like, for fuck, you know, what the fuck? But my answer is, don't care. We're not changing. We're going to keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
Because we made a deal in the summer, and I'm really happy about that. And the manager was all in. He wanted to do it, that we were going young, and there were going to be great times. There were going to be, you know, good times. There were going to be some itchy times. There were going to be times where you'd pull your hair out, because that's what happens when you make that call. And we're not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to stick to our guns. And this is the way we want to go as a club. And I keep saying that in my tweets to people back. We will not be signing experienced players, like you keep asking me. It's not going to happen. And they keep going on. And I'm like, we had loads of experience in our team that fucking went away to Sheffield Wednesday and made history for the wrong reasons. Our most experienced player couldn't clear the fucking ball in the 98th minute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And all they had to do was boot it 60 yards up the pitch, and we're in the final at Wembley. And they fluffed it to the edge of the box and they scored. That was our most experienced player, one of them. So I don't want to hear about experience. Experience is like overused every time you draw or lose or whatever else.
Yeah.
So I feel I love what we're doing, win, lose, or draw. I enjoy what I'm watching. I enjoy what I'm hearing. I enjoy what the youth coaches, the 21s, the 18s, everything, what the manager's doing. I think he's had like a revival, you know, from a personal perspective.
Like re-energized.
He's re-energized. He's won a lot of promotions, but he's really re-energized with this group. He's had a tough few weeks. The group's been good with him, looked after him. And I just think it's, for us, it was the right, we just changed the script after that horrific fucking, what happened at Sheffield Wednesday. And a lot of people would have a serious hangover. And I don't think we get enough credit.
I think we have, you know, we have a hangover and we use that excuse, the playoff hangover. Well, you know, if anyone deserves a playoff hangover, it's you after what happened.
Right. And we pretty much did a reload, you know, completely changed our philosophy and policy. And gone another way, and basically, you know, we've done okay. But I don't, you know, I'm not asking for credit, but you know, we're the youngest fucking team in League One. Nobody talks about that. None of the pundits, the journals, the articles, whatever else. Everyone else is getting like over what they've done in the start of the season, and we had an horrendous like fixture list at the start when you looked at it, who we were playing. You know what I mean? In the first 10 games, and yeah, no, fair play to the squad, fair play to the manager. But again, what I'm saying is that sometimes, you know, too many clubs panic and go completely away from what they decided to do. And we just, like, you know, put a flag in the sand in the summer and said, we're going to ride it. It's ride or die, that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've got to do something similar in terms of, this is the project, and we've all got to get behind the project, and we have to be patient. And yes, if we're going to get beat by Harrogate at home, you know, it's not going to be pretty, but we have to help ourselves.
And tell your fans. I told our fans in the summer, you know, I said to them, we're going this way. And I think, you know, a lot of them were like, love it. A lot of them were like, ooh. And some of them were like, oh, fuck me, you're going to be in non-league in a year or whatever. You know, so there was a lot of, like, you know, some mixed reaction, but overall. But the one thing is, everyone knew that we told them the truth. This is the way we're going. This is what we're going to do. We're not going to change. That is our policy.
Yeah.
So when I get a few people coming at me, telling me what to fucking do, you know, about go sign experience, I'm like, I got to block you. You're driving me mad. You know what I mean? It's like having skid marks on the side of your toilet bowl. It's like, I gotta like get rid of that. You know what I mean? I'm my OCD. So yeah, you need basically a plan, a structure to come out and tell the fans. Your owner needs to come out and speak to the fans.
Yeah.
Your owner needs to do like a Zoom interview with your press officer and come out and go, look, I've been pretty quiet the last few years. I'm not the worst owner in the world. We pay our bills.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a few.
He things will pay wrong. Our bills if we, you know, if yeah. we paid the bills through COVID. You know,
right. So he's not, you know, he's not as bad as some, you know, and he's kept you in existence and there's all that to go with. And then you'll argue, well, you've got 18,000 fans and you're breaking even, you don't need his money. Okay, just come out and tell the fans, look, here's what I want to do. I don't want to own a club long term. I will sell the club in future. We're going to hire a new manager. You know, don't use Ryan. Put Ryan to the side for a moment because he's getting a lot of flack.
He gets stuck between a rock and a hard place sometimes.
Right. So come out yourself and actually fucking put your minerals on the table and tell the fans exactly what you want to do over the next 24 months. I want to rebuild the squad. I want to get a different type of manager and I want to sell. They're my three goals. And bear with us. That's what I'm going to try and do. You know, so I think sometimes, you know, I had a really fascinating chat. I was chatting with Marcus Evans, who owned Ipswich.
Yeah.
You know, I was speaking with Marcus a few weeks ago. We were looking, you know, we got friendly during COVID and whatever else. And, you know, he's based in New York at times. And we were chatting about other sports stuff and whatever. And he was just saying, how do you do it? And I said, look, Marcus, probably one of the biggest things you could have done more at Ipswich was done a fans forum, sat and talked to them, tell them. Sometimes you get the flack because people don't see you. You get the flack because they don't have a face. No, I still get flack, even though I'm honest and I'm probably out there too much. But I don't get the flack that some people get. You know, I get, you know, a few people, the DMAC out crowds or whatever else, but it's not major. It's not vicious. It's, you know, you just, most of the people I get flack from are under the age of 23. Because in their lifetime of being born, they're used to just success for Peterborough. Mm-hmm. That's when I've owned the club. So, and their brains haven't formed properly either. So that's usually the group I get it off, you know. And there's a few old schoolers who aren't having me or won't have me, whatever. Fine, no problem. But they don't get vicious. They don't get, you know. So I just said, you know, to Marcus at the time, we were just talking about it and chewing the fat about football. I just said, I think if you put yourself out there more, because I like him, I think he's a great guy, I think people would have taken to you more. Yeah. And some people are a bit worried about that. And they like their privacy and anonymity and all of that, you know. So I honestly think the owner, he needs to do that. So Bradford owner needs to step up, needs to come out, needs to have a conversation. Ryan needs to also grow some minerals and tell the owner to go and do that. Mm-hmm. And say, look, you need to go out and do this. You know, now's the time. And the next hire has to be the right hire. So that's the Bradford thing.
Well, let's have a look. So you had another win on Saturday. You beat Lincoln 2-0. And now you've got an international break, I think, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's to be fair, the breaks are handy. We had one, like, you know, obviously it just gives everyone a chance to press reset button to have a few days off. Players are away for a few days. The manager's got a lot on. God bless Loss's mother. The funeral's next week. You know, we have three players in international duty. I think Wigan already did as well, hence why the call-off was on. Congrats to Hector, who got called up by Cyprus about time. You know, and then you've got Ronnie and you got the Man City boy who called up for the Elite England under 20 squad. So no, we were very good on Saturday, you know, probably under par first half. When I say under, you know, we weren't at our best, but again, control the game, most possession, most chances, most crosses, most whatever else, probably lacking still a bit of the clinical side of things, but you know, we're going to get there. You know, the last few games, who do we beat? We beat Bristol Rovers really comfortably at home. Even though I think Joey Barton thought differently, but he always does whenever his team loses. We drew away, obviously, at Carlisle. We had the mishap in the cup against Mansfield. We obviously won on Saturday. You know, we're unbeaten for a long period of time. You know, we're getting better and better. Players like Joel Randall now are suddenly the sense of belonging is arriving. They're assisting. They're making goals. You know, there's a lot of good things going on in the team. We've got now, with the break coming up, we've got young Malak, our striker, we signed from Chelsea. He should be back for the EFL Trophy game. He's getting fitter and fitter. Mm-hmm. Very excited about him. Jando should be back a month early. You know, all those things are going in the right way. We've got a new academy manager who's finally joined us from Burton. We recruited him a while ago, but he had to serve notice. Yeah. He looks to be brilliant. Me and Baz just signed a 19-year-old gem striker that's joining our 21s in January, who we're very, very excited about. This boy's going to be... I'm not getting carried away. I don't want to put, like, expectations. This is a kid who took up football quite late. I think he's studying a degree in a university. Very intelligent, but what a fucking handful. I think we found one here. 19. Yeah, I think he's got 9 goals in 10 games for his club in non-league that he was playing for. He's been with us for a couple of weeks, and he joins us officially in Jan. And we're going to have another one of them, so the 21s of a couple of young strikers, but they're missing that. They're missing the goals. That's what they've lost a lot of games. So very excited about that.
Where do you find players like that? Is that your outbound scouting network, or are you, because of your reputation, get, you know, people coming to you with...
A bit of both. So we do a bit of ping pong, you know, like the Joe Taylor one was through an agent I knew really well. So he came to my house, brought me footage, and always knows I'll look for a punt in non-league. So I got onto the club, he came in, people at the club didn't love Joe Taylor, weren't really having him, we signed him. I thought he was going to be a project, so that worked out well. Baz on his travels will always get out and about. I say to him, look, my scouts have seen this player. Can you go? Mm-hmm. And this one, Baz has found this one. You know, he rang me about 4 weeks ago and he said, Chairman, got to sign this boy. Da-da-da-da-da, 19. I said, why is he not in the back of your car? He said, well, we're not allowed until January. So I said, okay. I said, do your due diligence, get him in, get permission for us to have a look at him. The 21 staff will assess him. Manager doesn't need to know about him, because he's in the 21s and whatever else, but the manager eventually will get to know about him because he's got a lot on his plate. And the 21s have lost a lot of games because we've been lacking that cutting edge. We need a couple of young strikers. And striker scoring goals out there, the days of the Gales, the Tonys and all of that, there are a real shortage of them out there, like a real shortage of them. So my goal was to get a couple of them into the 21s, including develop Malak, obviously, and Jacob, who we signed at the end of the deadline. And I'm excited because we've got some really good players in the 21 setup. And I think they've lost a lot of games where they've been leading 4-3, 3-2. You know, they've had a lot of things go against them, but they've created a shitload of chances. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the good news is with our new academy director, you know, we're bringing more staff in to, you know, help obviously Ryan Semps, who runs the 21s, get new 18s manager. A lot of exciting things happening in the academy. So, on the striker front. And again, I've got my gem scout. Like, one thing, he sent me a little list this morning, and typical list, all the players under the age of 20 who've scored more than 7-8 goals so far across the country, Scotland, Wales, England, non-league or whatever. And we just go from there, start analysing all the time. You're always looking for the next big one. And we know Jono's going to leave in the first week of January. Yeah. So we already signed Malak, but it doesn't mean we can't sign another one. Yeah.
Can you source data on young non-league players, or is it all, you know, you
it's
know
limited your... it's limited, so we'll have to get eyes on the prize. We'll have to talk to people in the industry. The great thing about Barry is he knows everyone who works in non-league, so this boy, he knew the assistant manager at the club. So then we start finding out about his background, then we start finding out about his family. You know, again, phenomenal young man, great family, studying a master's degree at the university at 19. All those things you want to find out, you know, you start digging into. So through our contacts, the data is very limited. Once you go below the National League, League, you can get that on. But when you drop down to what's the level below that, that's going to
National League North and South.
It becomes very, very, you know, there's so many stats companies out there, whether it's your Y Scouts or whether it's your Instat and there's almost too many of them. It's getting saturated.
Yeah.
So it's a shame there ain't one monster with loads of money behind them who just buys them all up.
Give it time.
Give it time. Let me implement them into one. You know what I mean? So, so the stats thing from when you go down a certain level is difficult. Scotland, Wales, again, difficult. You know, so you're limited. And Ireland, limited.
Yeah. Does the data ever conflict then between the different companies?
At times, but not majorly. Mm-hmm. You know, usually you can see a hit with your eyes. You can see the data. You know, things like possession, passing, a lot of the time, I think they all draw from the same place.
Yeah.
But what there'll be some of those systems will have match reports, some of them will have scout reports, staff reports, and they might conflict. Mm-hmm. And that's where it's like, okay, you got to get your own eyes on the prize, yeah. A la my gem scout. Then I will send Sam from the club. Then I will send Barry. Like, for example, I said to the manager, you know, he's got a lot going on in the international break, but his staff will go to a couple of games to look at players that we're looking at for replacing Ronnie, things like that in January. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. We're just ahead of the eight. You know, the other day I had Aaron McLean ring me. He commentates on all the non-league games. And he said, you got to sign such and such player. I said, know all about him, already on our radar. Depending on course factor and all the things that go with it, all day long we'd be signing that player. He goes, good, I just wanted to, you know, make, and he does that, it's my man.
Yeah.
You know, it's his family. So he will always, he commentates in every game in the National League, you know what I mean, through BT. So again, it's all those little contacts. But that doesn't always make a player a successful player. It comes down to character. You don't always sign successful players in non-league. Sometimes the character, it's within the player. Are they going to make it themselves? Are they going to do what needs to be done? Do you know what I mean? To make the next step, like Ephraim Mason-Clark, Jack Taylor, Ryan de Havilland, they were made of the right stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like stepping up. And I have to give a special shout out to, well, one, Joel Randall getting his first league goal. Yeah. And I think he's ready for liftoff. And some people give him a hard time, but he's probably the best number 10 we've got at the club. And he was an important reason we nearly won at Carlisle and we won on Saturday. But David Adjiboy is finally fulfilling his potential. Yeah. Kwame's got a bit of a knock. He's not at his best. Very tough for David because he's up against Kwame. Kwame's one of the best young players outside the Premier League. But fair play to David. He gives it his all. You know, he didn't get much of a chance under McCann and Byrne when they were here. And we brought him in and we thought we liked him. We thought he'd do well at League One level.
But then you went back out, didn't you? And
On his request.
He wanted to go home.
Yeah, he wanted to go home. He wanted to go back to Sutton. And Grant wasn't picking him for whatever reason. He wasn't really in the squad. He wasn't, you know, I think he played a right wing back once. He really enjoys it under the current gaffer. So, and I think he's really finding his feet.
Yeah, it would have been easy for him to give up, you know, having gone back home again last season, because you kind of think from the outside that was the chance and maybe it just wasn't going to work for him. And,
he's
comfortable in his own surroundings, but
yeah,
he's a screamer that he scored on Saturday.
Oh, he's a good player. And I think he's always in a certain way of playing, very direct, get your head down, whatever. And I think he's finding with the manager, our manager, okay, we need you to play a bit differently. We need you to get your head up. We need you to watch the way we play. We need you to, when the winger on the other side's got it, you've got to come in here. You know, there's loads of things. And I think as you see players improving and their confidence grows, you know, we spent a couple hundred grand on David. We saw him as an exciting project, you know, and the manager, to be fair to him and Kieran and all the staff, they're making him better. And that's really what a football club's all about. It's what we do. You bring a player in from Sutton and you want to make him better. Just like when Sutton bring a player in from a league below or two leagues below, they want to make them better. So that's the evolution of the game. It doesn't always work, but that's what you want to do. So, no, it's good. So, listen, good now. They got a couple of weeks. They got a break. You know, again, people are like, table. I haven't a fucking clue where we are on the table. I don't care if Oxford or whoever is like, I said to someone the other day from my kids' school, really good guy. He was like, oh, yeah, you're doing great. And I'm like, again, it's irrelevant. I've learned that so many fucking times. Like, stop. It's irrelevant. Don't talk to me about tables and whatever else. Right now, it doesn't matter. What I'm enjoying is that if you take out all the goals we've led, I think we've dropped 12 points from all the goals we've led in games, whatever. We'd be like winning the fucking league by five, 6 points. And people are like, oh, it's a terrible record and late goals. And we will get better. Young people will improve.
Concentration.
This year, correct. Thank you. Young people, what happens as they get older? It's constant. Like, are you better now than you were? Well, maybe not now, because you get older, your mind goes the other way. But
you peaked a few years ago.
Yeah, exactly. When you were 27, you were better than when you were 24.
Right.
When you were 24, you were better than when you were 19. There are certain things, you know, and it's repetition. So I'm not really worried about those things happening that everyone loses their ever-loving shit over. Yes, the Mansfield thing stung because it was a financial thing about getting into the next round. It was the stupidity of a late penalty. But the Carlisle thing, my wife will tell you I was probably smashing walls, running around. Of course, but it was just the fucking freak things happen in football. And they've happened to us one too many times, which tells me we're going to get a load of freak things in a good way happen for us because it does even itself up. So, again, our players will learn. And they will learn to be lethal as they keep going in front. That record will get better and better and better, and they'll flip it and score a lot more late goals. So none of that concerns me.
Yeah. Well, let's look at just a couple of the other stories. I know we're against time again today, but we wanted to make sure that we did record a podcast. So I mean, it feels as though it's been talked to death, but I'm also interested in your opinion on the whole VAR situation with Liverpool for that game. It was Wolves, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, it was Tottenham.
Tottenham. Sorry, that's
yeah,
right.
So obviously, as a Liverpool fan, and I watched this against Brighton yesterday. I love Brighton as a club, but they do. Let me just wrap it up really quickly, and I don't want to get fined because I've seen some of the refereeing stuff for us and whatever else. Mm-hmm. I don't think the standard, whether it's VAR or refereeing, has got any better over the last 12 months. And I was a big fan of Howard Webb.
Yeah.
I honestly thought going in there, he would change it for the better. So I would say, if football managers are on the hot seat when results aren't going well, he and the people around him might find themselves in the same position. But I think, and please, I don't want people making headlines out of that to try and get me fined by the FA, I think he's the right person.
Yeah.
I think he'll make it better, but it needs to happen fast. I love VAR. I think, you know, it's the right thing. What they did, it was stupid, and they should have stopped it. Even if it was 4 minutes later, they should have stopped the game. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. It's better to get it right finally than talk about it for weeks afterwards. You would have taken the flak afterwards for like, oh my God, Tottenham scored, but it was cancelled because Liverpool's goal actually counted. Yeah, sorry, but that was the right thing to do. So get it right and don't worry about the immediate consequences, no matter how long it takes. I don't think that mistake's going to be made again.
Yeah, you know, that immediate consequences is an interesting one because I think that because of all the talk and the pressure of the last few weeks around VAR, you then get to a point where people are afraid to take their time on making a decision and then make the wrong decision. And it's a vicious circle because then it just compounds on what everyone's been talking about the weeks before.
I don't agree with that. Mike Dean on Sky Sports Saturday, he had a row with Paul Merson. I love that. I thought Merson was correct. And Mike Dean, he came across as pompous. He doesn't want ex-players in the VAR. I don't agree with that. You've got ex-players who became lawyers. You've got ex-players who become billionaires and millionaires. Yeah. Don't tell me they can't learn how to fucking referee a game or VAR.
Right.
So shove that up your arse because that's a load of nonsense. Go and get ex-pros. I know ex-pros who don't do coaching who will happily earn 50, 60 grand a year and do training and go in.
Yeah.
Their experience of playing 20 years of the game and seeing the game for what it is will be able to make better, in my opinion, better decisions.
I mean, you get ex-players and ex-managers who do, you know, ad hoc part-time jobs for the FA on disciplinary committees, for example, and things like that, where, you know, that they don't have all these qualifications necessarily of a referee, but they're still helping to make decisions because they know the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just to put a final thing on it, we move on to the next talking point. Go and get better referees from abroad if you have to. Our refs are getting fucking exported out and imported into countries like the UAE to referee out there. Why can't we do the same with some of the refs we saw at the World Cup? Because if you watch the World Cup, the Euros, there were some bloody good refs. Why can't we go recruit them? Why can't we give them a package to come move over and ref games in England? So you only have to watch the Champions League every week. There's decent referees. Why can't we do that? Why can't there be an international referee board?
That's a very interesting one, isn't it? Because you think about referees as coming from a domestic talent pool, whereas the Premier League is players from an international talent pool.
Absolutely.
And I never even thought about it before.
Yeah, but you've got all the kerfuffle over our refs, like Michael Oliver and co, are getting paid to go to the UAE and referee games for a league owned by clubs that own Premier League clubs. So there's a little bit of a conflict of interest. So what I'm saying is, let's do it and let's get the best. But let's also look at how we're training refs. Let's get ex-pros involved. I think we can improve it. VAR has to stay. Let's just calm down. Some of the overreaction is ridiculous. And no, I didn't agree with Jurgen's comment about replaying the game, although I think he was taking the piss a little bit and people took it too far.
Or maybe he was deflecting the issue as well.
He was. Listen, I'm Liverpool are great. You know, I'm moving up my three-year prediction that they'll win the league next year. From 3 years.
Well, they've had a better than expected start to the season with all the talk we were about midfielders.
We need a left back and a centre back in the summer, and I think we're good to go to start dominating again.
What do you make of the goalkeeper debate at Arsenal?
I believe Arteta doesn't want Ramsdale anymore. It's why he went and got Raya. I think Raya's more his type of goalkeeper. I can understand why. Raya's a very good goalie. I think he should have just in the summer done a deal and got Raya and sold Ramsdale. There'd be 10 clubs would have bought Ramsdale. He's a great young goalkeeper. So I don't believe in the whole in and out in the game. I don't believe it. I think it's just a smokescreen because he wants Raya Basie in the team. He's now in the team. So that's just my opinion.
So in the Championship, we talked Birmingham and what's going on this morning. I want a shout out from Middlesbrough. They've really turned things around. Four wins in a row. You know, they stuffed Sunderland at the weekend, and in the middle of that, they beat us in the cup. And to be honest, it was a no contest. It was one of those things where it was just easy for them.
They're always going to come good. Michael Carrick's far too good a young manager. They had a really rocky start. There were changes, recruitment. Takes time. The other shout out I would give to is Swansea. Swansea have won three or four in a row.
Yeah.
Michael Duff is under serious pressure. Fair play to them all sticking together. They now look like a unit. And the other one is, I got a bit of hammering off some Southampton fans about Russ. And my talk about Russell Martin, but it looks like Southampton might have turned the corner as well with, I think, two wins and a draw since we last spoke about them. So Leicester look like they're going to get that tied up by February, March now.
Right.
But Ipswich, yeah. Nice chunk of money on Jackie Taylor, who I cannot believe is not in the Irish squad, by the way. I honestly think Ipswich, dark horse, and long may it continue.
And you know, on that theme of... former players, Tammy Smodics keeping on scoring.
Love it. I've seen it. Isn't he top of the scoring charts? And finally,
he is. Yes, seven.
Yeah. And he got called up to the Irish squad today, which is an absolute travesty that he's not been called. I don't know what Stephen Kenny's doing. You got Jack Taylor and Smodics, two of my former players, who should have been in the Irish squad 2 years ago and now are established championship players. And you've still got 33 and 34 and 35 year old journeymen playing in that squad when we can't qualify for a World Cup or Euros to save our life. So get them in, get rid of the old guard and start again. If the Irish FA are sticking with him for whatever reason, you got to start replenishing the reserves. We've got some unbelievable talent in that squad now. And there's no excuse that we shouldn't be in the next qualifying, like winning groups, you know, not just vying. So delighted for Sammy. I'm hoping Blackburn sell him for 10 or 12 million. Right. You know, in January or whatever. Because again, I got a nice chunk on that too. Selfishly.
You got a few chips at play.
Very excited by it. But no, I'm delighted for the lads doing well. You know, Sammy's an emotional kid. It's great to see him prove his doubters wrong. And he's obviously he's the heart and soul of that Blackburn team. Every time I see them when they're winning games, they score a lot of goals, they concede a lot of goals. And then Jack Taylor, he's not quite getting in the first 11 all the time. But I believe their fans can see what I saw. It won't be long before he's basically like a mainstay in the 11. Yeah. So all good.
Yeah, in League One, we had Carlisle, you know, fresh off the drawing with you, shocking Bolton. And Jordan Gibson getting a hat-trick, which to me is even more shocking. I know he was the kid that scored against you in the last minute. He's ex-City player.
Let me tell you, he could do what he did against us 20 times. And 19 times, it doesn't go anywhere. Right. He mishits a shot, which gathers pace off the back of PK's boot into the corner. I mean, it was just a freak goal.
He basically did that against us in the last minute. Every time he plays against us, you know, he was one of those players that just was a lot of running around and no end product.
Yeah. Well,
he always sticks it to us whenever we
play. Fair play. Listen, Bolton aren't an easy side. They're one of the favourites to win the league. Mm-hmm. They recruited really well. We played them off the park at their place. It was a draw with the 10 men, which I thought actually hurt us. Very surprised by that result after watching Carlisle the other night and what we did to them. So I don't know the events. I don't know about injury. But listen, well done to Carlisle.
Yeah.
Good manager. Solid. That has to be the performance of the season so far.
Yeah. And into League Two, we had Neil Harris getting sacked, even though Gillingham were up there. So that's obviously a new owner, new ideas.
New owner impatience syndrome, I call that. We're all there. You know, I've done that myself. I sat managers when we were like sixth in League One. So I can't criticize any new owner for making moves like that. Harris has been there a while now. He took them down. Obviously, then the new owner came in, did a lot of players. Listen, they won on Saturday. They're in the shakeup. It's interesting, you know. So, and then obviously you've got Notts County still doing well. Yeah. Wrexham are kind of hanging in there. Do you still watch the Wrexham documentary?
So I haven't seen, I watched the first season, but the second season's not out yet, is it?
It is, yeah. It's crap.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen it. I didn't even know it was out.
Yeah, crap. I mean, I really enjoyed the first season. Yeah, my missus watch it on Hulu over here. I think it's 6-7 episodes in. There's fuck all football in it.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're trying to do with it. It's like, it's crap, honestly. Yeah. Like, they just competed in one of the best leagues ever with Notts County. Yeah. It was full of goals. It was excitement. It was whatever. And I've seen in six episodes, fuck all football. I mean, the episode the other night, the whole episode was about the Wrexham female team. With all due respect.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. You're trying to show, but like, do me a favor. I mean, I'm sure their own fans are probably like pulling their hair out going, where are the big wins? Yeah, where are the goals? Where's the excitement? Where are the, you know, whatever else. But, you know, first season, brilliant. Second season, absolute crap so far.
Well, I'll give it a bit of a watch and see. I had no idea it was even out.
Yeah. I saw Kevin Keegan got in trouble as well, didn't he? Didn't he say
something about that? Yeah.
Yeah, about female commentators in the men's game.
That was right. Yeah.
Poor old Kev. I'm sure he's on the cancellation list quickly. You know what I mean? Everyone would have lost their collective minds. Oh my God, almighty. The Athletic would have been writing articles. That's a disgrace.
It's in the works.
It's in the works. In the works, exactly. Yeah. Oh my God.
And the last one in League Two is Forest Green. You know, obviously, is it an interesting one? They were, you know, in and about it for a few years in League Two to get promoted, finally got promoted and got relegated, and now they're bottom of the table. Coming straight well, Dale, down. So,
I presume Dale Vince is too busy saving the world. You know?
So, well, now he's not going to fund Stop Oil. Maybe you can put the money back into the football club again.
You know my thoughts on him. you know, they'd be fine. He's way too wealthy to allow them to go down. You know, they wanted one of our players in the summer. And I always remember Barry ringing me going, yeah, but they've got no money. And I'm like, fuck off, Baz. The guy's like fucking worth hundreds of millions of wealth. Yeah. Like, and this was before he attacked me on Talk Sport. So, you know, it's like fucking madness, you know? So, yeah, anyway. Oh, I got something for the fans. So, TalkSport obviously are talking to me. They want me to do some show and whatever else, potentially next year. So, they're like knocking ideas around. So, football fans, what ideas would you like? What kind of show would you want me to do if I did have the time to accept a show once a week or whatever else on TalkSport? What do you think would work? I said something along the lines of, which actually I pitched it more as a TV show, me going and speaking to other owners of other clubs and doing an owners one-on-one. That probably won't work on the radio. So, you know, that's something Sky Sports would have to pay my agent a lot of money for me to do, you know. But, you know, again, sitting down with the Bradford owner and going, what are you doing? Flying out to Germany and saying, hey, Stefan, what's going on here? You know, why are you not selling the club? You'd love that, wouldn't you? So, football fans, throw in your ideas to us. Email them in to Phil. You know, what do you think the show should be, you know, on Talk Sports?
What do you want to hear?
Yeah, what do you want to hear if it's my show? You know what I mean? So it's not kind of tried and tested and repeat and say what Jordan White do or other shows do. What do you think the right flavor should be for that?
All right. Well, we'll see. Contact at hardtruthfootball.com is the place to let us know.
Oh, and good news in the non-league circuit. I think Southend were saved. Yeah. I think Scunthorpe have been saved. Well, we spoke about them last time. So delighted for their fans. Great to hear things like that. You know, that's nothing but good news. So I'm hoping those deals have gone through or are going through and their fans have got less heartache and you know, whatever else. So that's good. And then one surprise for me, I think you'd mentioned in your notes, what's going on at Bournemouth?
Yeah, so I put a Bournemouth challenging Luton, Sheffield United and Burnley for relegation this season.
Does that tell you the Gary O'Neill firing was a bad decision? You know, considering like some of the results he's pulled at Wolves. And the way they're playing. All I heard about this new manager was unbelievable football style, this, that, whatever else, another one of these kind of Bielsa types. And, you know, and I thought their recruitment was in the top four of recruitment in the summer for the deals they did. So something's not quite right after eight games and they haven't won a game. So it'd be interesting to hear from Bournemouth fans. Are they unlucky? Are they playing great football? Are they creating? Is it just a case of they're taking the time to find their feet, but when they do, they're going to win a lot of games? I don't know. I haven't seen any Bournemouth games, so it'd be interesting to hear from Bournemouth fans on that.
Or is it going to be another firing in a month's time and then a panic to bring somebody in to keep them up?
Who knows? So, you know, again, it would be fascinating to find out. And well done to Newcastle. Big win in the Champions League. A really, really poor start to the season. Steadied the ship. They're up and running. It's very exciting. And a special mention to Sean Dyche at Everton, who gets a lot of hammering, but they seem to be turning a corner as well. So, you know, positive stuff for some of the clubs that kind of we've spoken about in the podcast have been kind of like battered and bruised the last couple of years, right?
I got one last question before you wrap up, and that's kind of to do with the two takeovers in non-league of Southend and Scunthorpe. How much money, because you think, is there an opportunity for non-entrepreneurs, non-business owners, you know, people who do well in their corporate career, but they don't have you know, the wealth that a business owner may have to actually be a part of taking over a football club or not? Like, how much money do you need at that level?
I think so. You know, everyone gets frightened by the fact that you need to be a billionaire or whatever else to buy a club. But let's say in Scunthorpe, you had three or four successful business owners who, like in Peterborough, we have a weekly thing where a lot of business owners get together and have a coffee. I think we have something at our club that, you know, combines and connects. A lot of business club owners. So if you turn around and stood in a room with 10 of them and said, hey, you could buy a club the size of Scunthorpe, probably going to need to raise a couple of million. Everyone's got to put 200 grand in each. maybe another million to get them promoted this year. You know, there are possibilities that you can combine with other people. I've always said that if I bought another club, I would combine with other people, mm-hmm. you know, and people maybe with deeper pockets and whatever else, but, you know, and maybe three or four people. And yeah. you know, I've been approached about other clubs and other leagues, and I'm like, yeah, but I'd like to bring a few other people in with me instead of me. So I have nothing against that. I think the answer to your question is, it depends on the debts. It depends on the deals that are in place. It depends on the owners of those clubs. The whole Scunthorpe thing looks a mess. Everything I'm going to read about it, and the current guy that had it.
The stadium and everything.
Stadium. And obviously the stadium plays a big part. The South End thing is just historical with Ron Martin, who doesn't really want to go and who he is going to go from the pressure. I don't know, but I, you know, to buy a non-league club isn't like buying a league club where you'd have to pay 5 million or 6 million or 7 or 8 million. You know, there will be clubs there. And saying that, there are other clubs down there who want a lot more than that. Like I've heard Bromley, because they've got a great stadium, a great academy, a great setup. You know, you'd be talking in the 12s and 13, 14 million plus. For them. So, you know, but there are deals to be done. And you don't have to be a Goliath or a multimillionaire. And I think if you combined with people, like if you look at the Palace story back in the day, Steve Parish was never a skint member, mm-hmm. but he got together with three other people, I think local Palace people, who rescued the club when it went into receivership or administration. And they basically took it up to the Premier League. And then they, you know, sold a certain amount of shares to some wealthy big hitters. But it was three or four. If you look at the documentary, was it When Eagles Fly or whatever, it was on Amazon. It was quite good. It was three or four guys who were like fans, and they, and you know, okay, you know, how do we say, but it's an opportunity. Yes, we can all do well, but we can save a club. And three or four of them pool their money together and pretty much solved all the issues. And it can be done, and it can still be done. And sometimes you see it happen. So, and it can still happen in the Football League as well. So listen, I'm just glad those clubs are going to be okay. Yeah.
Is it the running cost that end up being the biggest shock to the system of an owner, as opposed to the price tag?
Yeah, because I think, like I've always said to you, I was always happy running Peterborough every year, starting, you know, June or July with a year ahead going, right, we got a 2 million hole this year.
Yeah.
I was always very comfortable. Okay, we can fill that. We can fill it with a sale. We can fill it with a cup run. We can fill it with, and even if we got halfway, I'm okay. It's when you get to the 3, 4, and 5 a year. Mm-hmm. When you start getting to the 3, 4, 5 million hole a year, it's when it's like panic, it's bad headlines, it's new raising new finance, it's paying off old loans, new loans, and it's the publicity around that. Yeah. That's where it gets sticky. That's something I'm trying to fix. Yeah. You know, as we fell in that trap, COVID wasn't kind, partners not talking, all those things that happen. So I think when you're buying a club, as long as you know, as Marcus actually said it to me, we were speaking there previously, when I was speaking to him in New York, and he was saying, you know, we always started every year at Ipswich with this. And I was like, so do we at Peterborough. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, when I owned it my own, it was always, that was the starting point. He goes, I was always comfortable with that. And I said, I was too. And it's only when you go outside the comfort zone and you get carried away where it's like, you know, so I just think when owners come in, and particularly foreign owners, they have to be careful. Like I spoke to an owner last week looking to buy a champ club, not because he's buying Peterborough. It was a friend asked me to do a favor and speak to this guy in California to give him some advice on buying a football club. So I gave him about an hour of my time. And he was looking at two clubs in the champ. And I just said to him, look, the biggest pitfalls for foreign owners is agents. You come in, you bring an agent in because he's nice to you, and they pull your pants down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They absolutely roger the life out of you.
Yeah.
You know, there's absolutely no lube involved. And you walk away basically needing a proctologist. So, you know, with your asshole ripped apart. So the point I'm saying is that be careful of the people around you. I was lucky when I went to Peterborough. I kind of knew what I was doing. I had Barry Fry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a mug. Some people who are very successful in other businesses become mugs when they buy a football club.
And now there's so much more money involved for everybody than there was when you bought the club.
And there is. So, you know, I'm always happy to lend a bit of advice, talk to people, talk them through who wants to buy. Even people who bought a non-league club, if they wanted half an hour of my time, I talk to them, help them. You know, I didn't want to see Scunthorpe fail. You know, the manager there is from the area, did well at Peterborough Sports. You know, I was rooting for them to do well. So you don't want to see any football club fail.
No.
Even the clubs you fucking detest, they're your biggest rivals. Yeah. You don't want to see them fail.
We've talked about it many times before. At the end of the day, it's a family. Even though we might hate each other when we play,
correct.
You know, there's rivalries. But
correct.
The fans all feel the same. You know, nobody wants it to happen to their club.
Absolutely.
I put, you know, some money into that Scunthorpe thing just because, you know, you want to do anything you can to help,
fair play.
You know, another club survive. So even though fair it's play. Pennies, you know, relatively speaking, I think we're all football fans and we all want to help
absolutely.
Each other.
Absolutely. I've always said that. So I think it's really important. So yeah, all good.
All right. Alrighty. Well, let's wrap things up. Thanks again. And we'll be back. Maybe not next week because of the international break. We'll just kind of see where the calendars drop. But yeah, send us some show ideas for TalkSport. contact@hardtruthfootball.com and any other questions that you might have.
Thanks, folks.
Next time, talk to you soon. Thank you. Take care.